Bandwidth for this podcast is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is We Have Communicators, episode 94, recorded on July 20th, 2010. Enjoy! Alright, it's time for We Have Communicators, the show that discusses all things iPhone, iPod Touch, iPad, App Store, iTunes, iOS, all that great stuff. Tonight we have a wonderful panel of guests talking about the iPhone 4 and all that other stuff. Adam Christensen's here from the MacCast. Hey, Adam.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm just referring to everything now as like iThings or something like that.
iStuff.
Because it's just gotten out of control. Yeah, mm-hmm. iStuff. That's good.
Yep. Jeff Gamet's here from the Mac Observer. Hey, Jeff.
Hey. I kind of like the idea of iStuff. I think I need more iStuff. I think all my stuff suddenly looks more valuable now that it's iStuff.
It would certainly be more shiny if you called it iStuff.
Well, maybe if I dusted it.
Yeah, that also helps. Cameron Hunt is here. He's the senior developer from Sandwich Dynamics. Hey, Cameron.
Hey.
Yeah, Cameron. say hello, Cameron.
Hello. It never gets old, does it?
It doesn't. It probably gets old for you, though. Some of you may remember...
Actually.
Oh, good. That's great. Yeah. Then some of you guys may remember Cameron from the interview about Birdhouse, the wonderful Birdhouse application. Cameron actually is the one who posted the video that we've referred to so many times on the episodes talking about the iPhone 4 antenna problem. So we'll get his feedback on that in a moment. But first, we have to introduce our special, our esteemed guest, Mr. Spencer Webb from Antennasys. Hey, Spencer.
Greetings. I think this was the first time I've ever been esteemed, but it sure helps get the wrinkles out.
Well, it's a relative thing, you know, so in comparison to the rest of us, I guess you're esteemed.
Yeah.
Excellent. That means all of my audio is going to be error checked.
Yes. So
that'll be a first.
Yeah, through Skype. All right. So getting right into it. Well, before we get right into it, we have to talk about the top story of the month, right? Is Scott Forstall getting a Twitter account?
That he doesn't tweet on.
Yeah, he doesn't even
That's
have his
cool.
picture
just
up there.
Just wanted to follow Conan.
Yeah, I think that's it. He has one person he follows, and it's Conan, and it's just a picture of a bird. It's not even Scott.
It is verified, though.
Yeah, now the interesting thing is, I thought maybe we'd see something after the press conference, you know, with him starting to tweet or Steve mentioning, hey, you know, we've also got Scott Forstall on there. And for those who don't know, Scott Forstall is the senior vice president of iOS. He's the guy who wears the bowling polo during the keynotes. And yeah, he hasn't tweeted, but he's on the Twitter.
See, he has 30,000 followers.
Yeah.
See, I think that he has a bet with some other people at Apple. And the bet was, I bet I can get over 30,000 followers on Twitter and never post a message. And a bunch of other people went, okay, you're on.
Yeah, that seems like the most likely thing. I guess, you know, if by the time we hear the September announcement from Apple about music and iPods and stuff like that, if we don't hear anything from Scott Forstall by that point, I'm just going to assume he's never going to tweet from that.
Yeah, I'll just unfollow him. I'll show him.
I have another theory. Maybe they're getting still overwhelmed in the app approval process, and he just had to fill in, and he was testing out some Twitter app.
Yeah, that's probably the most likely thing. He came across the latest version of Birdhouse, and it said it had to have an account before he could do it. There's the Birdhouse plug.
Or maybe Apple's making a Twitter app.
Oh, yeah.
That was scary.
Yeah, I'm sure. I doubt Steve likes Twitter at all.
Good point.
You don't think he's really the fake Steve Jobs on Twitter?
I know he's fake Steve Jobs. I know it in my heart. That's what I like to believe, that he's really fake Steve. D- Did you guys see that crazy, what was it, a Taiwanese video? It was a wrap-up of, of the entire event. It was, it basically, it started kind of normal, and it was all in CG. And then at some point, it got crazy because Steve Jobs had a lightsaber, and he started battling Bill Gates.
Bill Gates.
And then he killed Bill Gates and took his helmet, his Darth Vader helmet, and then just started doing crazy things like chopping off people's fingers to make their phones work better.
And the people thanked him for it.
Yeah.
And
you don't have to chop off all the fingers, however. We've proven that.
Yeah, just the pinky and the ring finger.
Yep.
And I loved the
entire left hand.
Yeah. Okay, so we have to...
How about spelling it Gizdomo when they were talking about Gizmodo?
Did they spell it improperly?
Yeah.
Like Gizdomo, or is it just they didn't do it correctly?
It was Gizdomo is what they spelled.
Were they using...
Arigato?
I'm sure that's exactly what he meant.
Yeah. All right, so... Let's put this out there. Cameron, you have a video of your iPhone 4 exhibiting, I think, the most poignant example of what's going on with at least some of the iPhone 4s. And I don't know if you can do this all the time, but in the video you showed loading a page, New York Times, I think it was, just, you know, setting it on the table, hitting the load button, and it loads up just as it would over the 3G network. Then you actually cup it with your hand, so you cover it, and in order to attenuate the signal, I'm guessing, right?
Yep.
And you can load the page pretty well, even doing that. But then you show loading the page, and then you touch your finger right on that gap where everybody says is the problem, and it just pauses. It stops. And you actually show yourself being able to touch, it stops, let go, it keeps going, touch, it stops, it like magic.
Yeah, it's like a pause button. It's pretty great.
So can you get that to happen? Can you do that now?
Yeah, I can do that now if I wanted. You can't see it because this is audio, but yeah.
No, just hold it up to the mic.
Yeah.
I'll stream something from Pandora and I'll pause it with my finger.
You can do that? You can pause something from Pandora even doing that?
No, I was kidding. Because Pandora buffers, it takes like...
Oh, yeah, that's true.
For it to catch up. I've tried it, though. it only happens in my apartment. I think I'm in some kind of black hole of reception where I get... Since the new update where they rejiggered the bars... I get about 3 or 4 bars now in my apartment, and then it drops to 1 when I put my finger on it. But I can still, you know, stop data with my finger.
Right, right.
And the weird thing is that I know my brother who lives outside of Portland. He can't reproduce it at all. And then one time he came over. And as long as he was in my apartment, he could reproduce it. So I'm pretty sure it's location-based. And furthermore, everywhere around Portland that I've gone, in and around downtown Portland, I haven't had problems with it at all. I've used it without a case, and I haven't seen like any data loss.
Do you drop calls anywhere. Ever?
I've actually had calls in my apartment with people in New York, and theirs is the side that dropped, not mine.
Oh.
Of course, I don't really hold my phone when I call. I prefer to use the earbuds, so I don't touch the spot when I call. But, you know, theirs is the side that dropped.
Okay. Now, when you're using the phone, just holding it and punching keys and all that stuff, are you covering that spot to any degree? And do you have problems with it?
When I'm what?
When you're just using it to surf the web or check email or whatever, do you have problems with data when you're holding it like that?
Only when I'm in my apartment. And when I'm in my apartment, I'm on Wi-Fi, so I don't see the problem.
Okay.
I mean, I've worked around it, but
so that,
everywhere else, I've held it and gotten data just fine.
Gotcha. Okay, so that brings up the big question that we've been trying to figure out on the show for the last few weeks is, and this is to you, Spencer, there are two things that cause issues with the antenna. There's attenuation, and then there's also detuning. Now, can you explain the difference for those who haven't already heard it a million times? What's the difference between that, and what does each, what is the issue with each?
Well, detuning the antenna means you're loading it with the dielectric of your hand. It can be thought of in the same way as if you take a wine glass and you hit it with a fork and you make it ring and then fill it with some liquid, preferably wine, the frequency of that vibration is going to change. Similarly, the antenna is designed to be resonant and operate at a certain band of frequencies for the cell band. And as soon as you put your hand over it, it's going to detune the antenna and it's going to change its characteristics. That is also highly dependent on how the radio, how sensitive the radio is to that sort of detuning. Now, attenuation means that an electromagnetic wave wants to go through something that is lossy. Your hand is lossy because we're all bags of salty water and we're a bit conductive, not perfectly, but somewhat. So when the electromagnetic wave tries to go through our hand, it's going to get attenuated, which means it's going to cause currents to flow in our body, which is going to eat up energy and you're going to have less energy to radiate. So those are two mechanisms, but the overall effect adds up to, put hand on antenna, signal goes down.
Okay, now, I guess we've been assuming that because there's this separation between the two antennas, there's the Wi-Fi slash Bluetooth and then the cellular slash other stuff, we've been assuming that by that you can somehow bridge those two antennas and get them to interfere with each other and, you know, either, you know, people say, oh, you're shorting it out. I don't think that can actually happen, but... Is there any interference, as far as you can tell, from the Wi-Fi antenna on the cellular antenna?
No, that's crazy talk. The cellular antenna has nothing to do with the Wi-Fi antenna and vice versa. And I think if anybody had the impression that touching both of them at the same time was somehow worse than touching just the cell antenna, I think it was coincidence, or they talked themselves into it. They don't have anything to do with each other.
Right. So Apple held their press conference on Friday, and Steve Jobs basically went up and said, well, first of all, they played the antenna song, which I thought was great and also very uncharacteristic of Apple. You can even see the YouTube controls in there, but, you know, basically the message of the antenna song, if you haven't already seen it, is, you know, if you don't like it, take it back, and if you don't want one, just don't buy it. And that was kind of Apple's position on the whole thing, on the whole antenna gate, as they referred to it, saying that really all phones suffer from this attenuation issue, and the iPhone 4 is no different, stating data from AT&T. They're seeing a third of the return rate as they did with the iPhone 3GS last year at the same point after it started selling. They're not seeing a lot of calls to AppleCare regarding the antenna issues. And I think it was like 0.5 increase per every 100 in dropped calls they were seeing over the 3GS.
Well, I take that there's a little bit of inaccuracy in how he stated the change in dropped calls, because as I understood it, AT&T holds that information very close to its vest, and they should, because the cellular companies live and die on their dropped call frequency. If you have a lot of dropped calls and you're in the cellular industry, that's all you're going to work on is figuring out how to solve that problem, because that equals customers. If you have, if somebody has a dropped call, they're more pissed off than if they simply can't, you know, can't make the call. So I believe what he said is he gave the difference between the 3G and with the 3GS and the iPhone 4 as being 1 in 100 more. And can anybody verify that that's what he said?
Yes. Yeah, he said it was okay. The Delta.
less than 1 in 100 more.
Okay, that's no information. Because right. Let's say, because if the dropped call rate is 1 in 1,000 and it's just increased by 1 in 100, that just increased the drop call rate by a factor of 10. That's huge. So that could be the case, and we still don't know. So that was a little bit of sleight of hand on the part of Apple in giving us the difference. We don't want the difference. We want the ratio. That's a big difference in how you think of things. So it could be horrible, and we still don't know the answer.
Okay, so what they actually did, they showed videos of various other phones with attenuation issues, Nokia, RIM, BlackBerry. They actually they're pretty pissed off that they brought the other companies into the Apple issue. I'm not sure Apple was trying to bring them in and point fingers. I think they were simply trying to demonstrate that the attenuation happens to all phones in poor signal areas. Now, I don't know if you noticed in the video with the iPhone 4, they actually showed with the updated bars, which they have done, they've actually rolled out 4.01 for all iOS devices, iPhones anyway, showing with the new bar formula as well as an updated bar view. So if you look at the video, you actually see that the iPhone 4 starts with 3 bars, indicating that it's in a poorer reception area, and so it's more susceptible to attenuation. And it, you know, they can get all these phones to drop down bars. And I guess the big question is, and Spencer, you did your big write up on the blog on Thursday or Friday, and is the iPhone 4, because of its external antenna design, because we're coming in direct contact with it, is it more susceptible to attenuation than these other phones?
Well, first of all, I think Steve Jobs was correct. Any phone, in fact, any handheld radio device is going to suffer from attenuation when you put your hand on the antenna. That's a true statement. There's no question about that. However, Apple moved the antenna action from the back of the phone around to the sides of the phone. And they did so for some pretty good reasons. And they did so because of largely marketing pressure or product design pressure. And it was a pretty bold move. However, they also put it in the place where, in that form factor, you got the highest probability of covering it with a hand. Whereas when the antenna was on the back of the phone, like the 3GS, it was still on the bottom. It was still kind of where you'd put your hand over it. But the sort of natural ergonomics would be such that your hand would be have some air between your flesh and the antenna, and you'd give it a fighting chance. Where they put it on the iPhone 4 is right, at least in my hand, in my mitts, it's right where the fleshy part under my thumb is going to land when I'm holding the phone. Now, I've been holding the phone using the Vulcan iPhone grip since the very first iPhone, so that was sort of natural for me to avoid that problem. But when you go to hold the phone in a data entry mode where you're texting or you're holding the phone in your left hand, and I apologize to the lefties who would hold it the other way, but if you hold the phone in your left hand and you're punching buttons with your right hand, it's exactly the grip of death, even if you're good at holding it during a call. So, yes, every device is going to suffer from that, but because of the location of what we would call the hotspot for the cellular antenna, it's going to suffer more from that. And I think we showed that unequivocally in our data on the blog at antennasys.com.
Now, Steve pointed out that he said something like, you know, we made it very obvious where the weak spot was on the iPhone 4 and pointed to that black band or the black separator between the two antennas on the left side of the phone. Why is that the weak spot? Isn't the antenna the entire GSM antenna that bottom side, the right side, and part of the top?
Well, it's the feed point, that little gap there that shows as a black stripe on the side. That's where the antenna is feeding from. And for him to say we made it obvious is ridiculous, because if you scour the literature and the documentation and the website and everything that came with your iPhone, there is not the barest hint of a mention of the antenna or where it is. Actually, you know what? I take it back. If you go into the RF safety section of the manual for the iPhone 4, you know, the real fine type underneath all the legal gibberish, they do mention that there is an antenna and it's on the bottom left of the phone. But nobody reads that. They did not make it obvious. They did not train anybody. That's just insane.
I think what he meant not was that they pointed it out, but they, you know, but that there was a black band there that signified it.
Right.
So that people could say, just touch the black band and it'll drop calls or, you know, drop data.
So he was implying that there's a kick me sign on the iPhone 4.
Yeah, he was basically saying that there's an aesthetic, you know.
Yeah, there's a spot that you can
don't know what it is. Now, if there's an aesthetic.
Yeah. Okay. So if it is the feed spot, I don't understand how antennas work specifically. But even though there's that feed spot there, isn't it going throughout the antenna? Shouldn't some of the signal come in and happen on the other portions of the antenna where it's not being attenuated so much? Or
well. It's the most critical spot, put it that way.
Okay.
If you think of the antenna as a sprinkler, a lawn sprinkler, and the garden hose leading up to the lawn sprinkler is what we call the transmission line, the point where you connect the transmission line or the garden hose up to the sprinkler or the antenna, that point is that black stripe. So if you wanted to really shut off the flow to your sprinkler, where would you stick your finger? Well, you'd stick it right in the hole, right before it gets to the rest of the sprinkler. If you go to the sprinkler that has 16,000 holes on it, and you cover up one of the holes, or two of the holes, or 10 of the holes, you don't really stop the sprinkler from working. But if you go right to where the garden hose attaches to the sprinkler and you pinch it, then the whole sprinkler stops. That's what's going on.
Okay. So it's not so much, because I think in terms of, you know, DC current and stuff like that, I assume if it's connected to the metal that it's just going to flow throughout the metal. But it doesn't happen that way.
It doesn't happen that way. And, you know, if you could see RF as it flows down a wire, I'd be out of business. The fact is that the amount of current on that conductor is changing as you travel along that conductor. And that all has to do with, you know, physics and sticky stuff like that.
Sure, sure. So Apple's solution to it, after saying, okay, this happens to every phone, it's not a big deal, but because everybody's complained about it, we're going to give everybody a free bumper. Now, that's something that you, Spencer, have been arguing for on your blog in the last few posts. So just by giving that, it's not so much a short again, it's just giving it a little bit of breathing room between your hand, which is attenuating it, and the air where the signal ultimately wants to be.
Exactly. Let's go back to our lawn sprinkler analogy. If I said, okay, I'm now going to take this little X-shaped piece of metal and I'm going to stick it in the very end of the of the garden hose. So when you go over to try to pinch it to shut it down, you can't pinch it all the way. Well, you could think of the bumper as that. It's giving a little bit of airspace to the antenna, so it gives it a fighting chance to work. And it works. And we tested it, and the Apple bumpers, if you look at the graph on the blog entitled iPhone 4 Meets the Grip of Detonator, the graph shows that in our area, for the signal strength we were working with, okay, and it is a little bit of a limited scope, but you know, in our situation, when you put the Apple iPhone 4 bumpers on the phone, the phone started behaving with respect to the grips about the same as a 3G. In fact, it behaved really well. There's no question about it. The iPhone 4 radio is hot as a pistol. It's a great design. And frankly, the antenna is a good design too. But to think that you were able to, you know, grip it as closely as they intended for you to, I think that fell short. The bumpers fixes it. And I did post a really brief blog post a couple of days ago while I was traveling saying, you know, thank you, Apple. You did the right thing.
All right, I have a question about the antennas, and this will show how extremely, extremely limited my knowledge is. So if that one point on the antennas is the feed point, like the not the sprinkler head, but the other end of the hose, why couldn't they have taken one of the antennas and just switched it so that the other end of that antenna was that main feed point?
In other words, basically move that hot spot to a different gap on the phone.
To the top of the phone?
Yeah. So like one of them has the gap, or one of them uses the gap down by your hand where your thumb would be, and the other one uses the gap up at the top.
Right. It's a great question. And
oh, good.
No, it's an excellent question. And it goes back to the whole evolution of cell phones. Years ago, when cell phones were powered by steam and coal, the antennas were on top, and you pulled them up, and they worked great. And then later, marketing pressures wanted to make the antennas smaller, so they made these physically small antennas, and they still kept them on top. And an example of that would be the Trio that had the bump on top, and there were others that had the little nubber that was still the antenna, but it was really short. And then along comes the FCC with a set of rules regarding specific absorption rate, which is how much RF energy the legislators are going to allow your brain to absorb. And they set a limit based on science that said, at or below this limit, we know for sure there's no effects. So now, in order to meet those specific absorption rate requirements, the antennas sort of migrated or evolved down to the bottom of the phone. And for a long time now, just about every cell phone has its antenna at the bottom. So that wasn't a big surprise that the iPhone 4's antenna was at the bottom. The 3GS's antenna was at the bottom. The primordial iPhone's antenna was at the bottom. The Motorola Razr's antenna is at the bottom. They're all down there so that they can meet the FCC's specific absorption rate tests. But that sort of answers your question. The reason they didn't put the antenna at the top of the phone is they probably would fail that test.
Okay.
That's the short answer. I don't think they expected things to get as out of hand as they did when they moved from the back of the phone to the edges of the phone. And the reason they did it, if you think about it, they did it to get the antenna as far out of the case as possible. Right. And from that standpoint, it does two good things. It makes room for all the other junk they want to stick in there. It allows the phone to be as small as it can be. And it actually gives the antenna more air so that it can be efficient because it's kind of on the edge. However, it's on the edge that you stick a human hand over and screw the whole thing up.
So the if you want, so when I use my iPhone 3GS in my office, I have, it's like a bunker. I go outside and I get 5 bars, and here I get hardly anything. So I typically hold it in the Vulcan iPhone pinch kind of way to, I guess, avoid where the antenna is toward the bottom on the back of the phone. Now, with the iPhone 4, ideally you will want to just simply avoid that little feed spot, and then you should be pretty good.
I use the Vulcan iPhone pinch just routinely, and I think there's a picture of it. I don't think I put it on my website, but the Wall Street Journal did an article, and they wanted pictures, and we sent them a picture showing me holding the phone with the Vulcan iPhone pinch. I think anything that will get your hand away from the bottom of the phone is going to work. It'll work for the iPhone 4, it'll work for the 3GS, it'll work for the 3G, it'll work for the primordial iPhone, it'll work for the Motorola Razr, it'll work for everything, because that's where the antenna is, and if you can figure out a way to hold it without putting your hand over it, you're ahead of the game.
Yeah. Now, to be clear, you don't really have to hold it in that sort of way if you are in a great coverage area, like, you know, at an Apple store, for example.
or on the Apple campus, where I recently learned that the Apple campus has both an AT&T cell site and a Verizon cell site on campus, which I think is amusing.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, if you're being bathed in signal, if you're noticing that your bottle of water is boiling inexplicably, then, yeah, there's almost nothing you can do to screw things up.
Yeah.
And certainly the further you get into a fringe area or the weaker your signals get, the more likely anything you do is going to screw it up. So absolutely, the guys with weak signals are going to be experiencing these problems much more than the guys sitting in their offices at Apple wondering what all the fuss is about.
Yeah. Now, there have been some reports specifically from Gizmodo, and I've heard from other places, that some iPhone 4 owners have been swapping out their iPhone 4s and have noticed slight physical differences, such as a slightly different color in that little separator piece, and maybe it's a little bit smoother. People, they're assuming that Apple might be slipstreaming some kind of coating or maybe an anodization on the antenna. Would that help at all, some kind of coating like that?
Well, first of all, I don't have specific information on these reports. In fact, this is the first time I'm hearing it. But I kind of think people are starting to see ghosts.
Yeah.
And I think there's nothing to it. Either they're just seeing things or it's simple manufacturing variations. One of the things I talked about in the blog was that a very, very thin insulator, like something we use in our lab, is about a thousandth of an inch thick piece of Kapton tape. This very, very strong, very good insulator, and very thin. And it's good for all sorts of wonderful things that we do in the lab. But a piece of that will do absolutely nothing, because if you're in DC think, if you're in flashlight, you know, bulb battery switch think, then yeah, it's an insulator. But RF doesn't work that way, and RF sees that really thin insulator as what we call a capacitor. And if the capacitance is sufficiently high, it will blast right through that barrier and won't even know it's there. So no, a very thin coating is not going to have an effect. Now, as that coating gets thicker, okay, you can imagine, you know, well, let's go to 10,000ths of an inch. Let's go to 100,000ths of an inch. Well, around 100,000ths of an inch, you've got the iPhone bumpers.
Right.
And we do know that it starts to have a really good effect there. So, you know, a couple of thousandths of an inch is not going to do anything. Now, that band is stainless steel, so the word anodization doesn't apply. That only applies to aluminum.
Right.
Just a little sticky point there, but it, you know, as you're implying, some sort of a thin coating, it really isn't going to do anything, and it really needs to have a little bit of thickness to it, and the iPhone bumpers should be considered a minimum.
Now, would the if Apple had moved the feed point a little bit further inside the phone, would we be seeing this big of a problem?
That's a terrific question. And the answer is no, you wouldn't, because you would have built in the space between the antenna itself and your hand, just like in the 3G and the 3GS and the primordial iPhone. But you would have had to take away some volume from one of the other designers.
Right.
So, sorry, you can't get your extra fancy audio chip in there, or sorry, you can't get your you know, the carrier, the special chips you need to be able to run Verizon. Oh, did I say that? Okay, I guess I did. So somebody has to give something up. So you can imagine sitting around the round table and you got the audio guy, the battery guy, the RF guy, the cellular services guy, the antenna guy, the industrial designer, the art director, and they're all sitting around a table and they're saying, you know, they're fighting for territory. So what you're saying is what the antenna guy would be saying. He'd be saying, hey, let's put this in the phone. Let's put 80 thousandths of an inch of air over this thing and a plastic cover over this thing, and we'll be golden. And everybody says, air? You're not going to put air in my phone. I want to put a gyroscope in the phone. I want to put accelerometers in there. I don't want to put air in there. And he's going to get, you know, defeated because you can't CRF. So I think that's where the tug of war became, hey, we're going to take this risk. We know it's a risk. We're going to take it because it's worth it. And this is the result of taking the risk. I do not fault them for taking the risk, but it's a risk.
Right. Now, part of the presentation, which was actually very cool, Steve Jobs actually pointed out that they do quite a lot of testing on all of their wireless products. Some of the reporting on this problem has kind of implied that maybe Apple never tested it thoroughly enough, or maybe they didn't take it out of those special disguise cases as they were testing it outside, because they have, you know, great reception at Apple, of course, but, you know, doing real-world testing, they have a case on there. And so he showed off some of these testing labs to prove that they do tons and tons of testing. I'm specifically looking at the one that looks like a Stargate, where the guy is sitting on a chair.
Yes.
And holding on to it. Now, the big question now is, you know, did Apple test this thing thoroughly enough? Did they realize that that spot is going to be a problem, or is it just not a huge problem unless you're in a poor signal area?
What did they know, and when did they know it? Sure does sound like AntennaGate.
Yeah.
It's a really good question, and they have already boasted that they've invested $100 million in their facilities for antenna development, which rather makes my mouth water. But we're not allowed to have that much good stuff here in southern New Hampshire. We're lucky we have heat. But it's for those reasons that I find it really hard to believe that they didn't understand the risk of the design. So let's just assume that they did enough testing to know that, yep, it's a risk. And then they took the next step, which is to say, what do we believe the results of this risk are going to be? And somebody must have done a calculation that said it's going to result in, you know, one more dropped call every 100 or something like that. Somebody had an opinion that said it's going to be a very small impact, but it's worth it because it's so cool. And they just made it. They had the wrong calculus. They made the wrong decision. It's not the first time that sort of thing is going to happen in the world of engineering and high tech, and it won't be, you know, it won't be the last time.
Well, you know, I wonder if they did make an error, because they talked about the ratio of call drops, the slight increase with the iPhone 4, but I mean, let's just take a quick panel. I don't have an iPhone 4, but everybody else, Cameron, do you notice any extra drop calls? I guess you already weighed in and said you use the earbuds most of the time, right?
I use the earbuds most of the time, but I haven't experienced any dropped calls. And And I don't really think it's an error on Apple's part. I think it's a trade-off, and I think the N10 is probably overall better.
Yeah, and they have tons more battery capacity in there, too. That's something that hasn't really been focused on, but they do have much greater battery capacity. Adam, do you have you had any drop calls or data problems with your iPhone 4 that you can attribute to the spot?
Not unless I'm actually trying, and I think Spencer's alluding to something that I just want to comment on and get his take when we get back around.
Yeah,
and that is he's alluding to what I've thought all along, which is this is really a nerd problem, a press problem. This is somebody grabbed the phone and saw this weird behavior and went, oh, that's strange, and then started really investigating it, right? And then it just got blown out of proportion. And I think he's exactly right. I think internally at Apple they were aware of the issue, but probably someone said, well, let's give it to people and put it in our lab and hold it like normal people would hold it and see what happens.
Yeah.
And when they did those things, those logical real world things, how are people going to use these things, they saw that the effect was minimal. And I think that's what I'm experiencing. That's what I've asked a million people. You know, I have 25,000 listeners every week. I've asked every week for 3 weeks. Someone email me and tell me that they're having dropped calls in normal usage, not where you're trying to do the death grip and touch the right point and get it, because I can do that. Although I do have to admit, too, even when I'm trying to make it happen, it happens inconsistently. Even in the same location where I'm at my house, because I think I told you guys last week I was able to drop calls. Suddenly this week I'm not able to drop calls. So maybe the AT&T signal's a little bit better this week for whatever reason and I can't do it. And I think that was the kind of thing that Apple realized. They went, look, this is not going to be a problem. And then some nerd figured out, oh, look, this is weird, and put up a YouTube video. And then the press ran with it, and everybody went, whoa, it's a major design flaw. Yes, the physical behavior can happen, and we can prove it in labs, and we can show it happening, and we can, just like this analysis, explain why it happens. But for the real average user, this is not a day-to-day problem. And I think that ultimately what Apple came down to and said, look, the problem's there in the lab, but it's not going to happen to users. And I think that's what they were trying to prove at the press conference, too, by throwing out return numbers and calls and complaints into Apple Care and show, look, these numbers are exactly what we thought. They're very small.
Yeah, it's a real world versus, you know, actually trying to do it situation. You know, sometimes I might accidentally hit the send button as I'm typing out a text message and I haven't finished typing it. If I'm in my office or at home, actually, I can do the trick where I just kind of like put it against my leg and cover it with my hands, and it'll usually stop the sending of the text message. So I know how to get my phone to stop.
It's a feature that, yeah. I also need to throw in that I have to tell you, I've had 100% more dropped calls due to the proximity sensor bug.
Oh, yeah.
And to me, that's the bigger thing that everybody should be complaining that Apple fixes, because I've put people on FaceTime calls, I've hung up on people, I've put people in conference calls, all with my face, using the phone normally.
And actually, that's one of the things.
That's why they call it FaceTime.
Because you're pressing it with your face. And but they did. Steve actually did address that issue. Did you hear that, Adam? That they
He said an update's coming, but I think that should have been the update before the antenna, you know, bar fix or whatever. I don't know why that's more of a why that was more of a priority.
I'll tell you why. Because you can't see RF. You could, you know, when you put a face print on your phone, and all of a sudden you're, you know, dialing Guam or, you know, generating a FaceTime call with your dog. That's real obvious, but you can't see RF, so it becomes more more fodder for mass hysteria. And I really think that's what it was. It went right off the deep end.
Yeah, there's an awful lot of hoopla.
Just bringing this back around to that number, right? The number of additional dropped calls. I do have to wonder how many, and maybe AT&T can tell the difference between a lost signal drop call, and maybe that's the answer to this, and I've just answered my own question, but, you know, how many people are calling up to complain about dropped calls through Apple Care, say, and not realizing it's the proximity sensor bug?
Yeah, that they're shutting it off. Yeah. So you're not really experiencing an increase in drop calls, Jeff?
Not at all, with or without a bumper.
Yeah. Jeff, are you experiencing an increase or a change at all in drop calls between iPhone 4 and 3GS or 3G, I guess?
Not at all. And I can, in my office where I have a weaker signal, make my signal drop down now that I have the 4.0.1 update installed. But my signal never goes away, and it doesn't matter if it's one bar or five bars. My calls are the same. I'm not dropping any. The only calls that consistently drop for me are when I'm talking with Brian Chafin, and it's because where he is, his cell signal is so bad that he's lucky to be able to dial out.
Mm-hmm.
So those dropped calls I completely dismiss from the equation because that's been an ongoing problem forever. So I'm not dropping calls, and I'm certainly not seeing an increase in drop calls. And I asked all of my Twitter followers if anyone has returned their iPhone. And I got one person that responded and said, yes, I have. I'm not happy with the iPhone. I'm not happy with the reception. One person. And the only other person I know that's having a real serious problem is Katie Floyd. And I think her problems go way beyond the whole what kind of antenna do you have. And I think that there's something else that's a problem in her situation.
Right. Now, Spencer, before I ask you if you've been dropping calls, did you check out the AnonTech, the update to that analysis of how the bars are displayed? They actually lowered it so that it will show that you have bars at an even lower signal at -121 dBm.
Right. I did see the AnonTech stuff. By the way, they did some really cool hacking to get the answers they got in their post. But I got the recent bar update, and it's kind of amusing. We went from 4 to 5 bars in my location to 3 to 4 bars after the update. And I could see the little first bar a lot better now, which I really appreciate.
Yeah.
Especially since I, you know, wear bifocals. It really helps. Thanks, Apple. But it didn't have any significant impact on the actual operation of the phone.
Right. It just kind of made it more uniform. So if you look at this picture I'm looking at on Mac Rumors, it's a little diagram that AnonTech created. The original bars, kind of the fifth bar took up a like half of the spectrum of -51 to -91 dBm. So if you had a signal strength within those numbers, it would show 5 bars, and then the second one was, so the fourth bar was fairly large too, and then it just kind of got shorter down to the last one, and then it was a little bit fatter, but now it's pretty uniform for the most part now.
I think the thing that was good about what Apple did is they said, hey, AT&T recently came up with a standard for these bars. Now, I don't know what recently means, but AT&T apparently has a standard, and Apple said, we're going to conform to this standard, this industry standard. So now, theoretically, any phone that is on the AT&T network is going to, especially now, is going to comply to the standard, and the bars are going to mean the same thing. And my technical response to that is whoop-de-doo. the bars are a relative signal strength indication. I couldn't care less how many dBm the bars mean. You know, more bars are good, less bars are less good. That's all we need to know. And I think the whole discussion of bars and how many bars people have and what bars mean and the fact that they changed the definition of the bars and we established a standard for the bars, I think it's all smoke and mirrors. It's all a big distraction from the real problem, which is, hey, folks, we could change the bars with software. We can't change the hardware without a massive recall and losing millions and millions of dollars. So let's talk about the bars. I think there's no value to the bars beyond that.
You don't think that there's any value in the change that they made?
Not one little tiny itty bitty bit.
Because I think that by showing less bars, if you're in a poor signal area and you think that you have five bars, maybe. And so I guess Cameron's a perfect example, because Cameron, you saw that your bars went from 5 to 3 in your apartment.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's kind of, lowering your expectations, I guess, is the main,
Exactly what it is. This was a big experiment in human factors.
Yeah.
This was managing expectations at its finest. But it has absolutely nothing to do with the actual performance of the phone. It just has to do with how people feel.
Right.
And in that sense, if it makes people feel better, well, okay. Can't hurt.
Yeah.
And it's also kind of, shifting a little blame on AT&T. Like, well, here's what your signal really is.
True. Yeah.
Well, and the irony of that is they're now using AT&T's standard formula. So AT&T wants to complain about that. Apple just goes, well, you guys standardized it.
Yeah, frankly, that could be a big win for Apple out of this whole thing, is AT&T had to take some responsibility. So now if they follow the AT&T formula and people still complain about the bars, they just say, hey, let me give you AT&T's phone number.
Right, exactly. Now, so Spencer, are you seeing with your daily use and normal usage of the iPhone 4, how's the performance? Is it better or worse than your primordial iPhone?
I love it. I think I can't come up with evidence that says it's better. Everything else about it is certainly better.
Sure.
But I certainly have not seen any increase in dropped calls. I think it's performed just fantastically. If you put that phone in a little black box and you handed it to me and said, here, use this for a while and compare it to your primordial iPhone, I would have said, from a phone point of view, is the same.
Okay, so you're not seeing any, even with data. I suppose you were using Edge before, but you're not really seeing a drop off in data usage if you're holding it, or do you? I guess you use a case though.
Well, I didn't do a lot of data with the primordial iPhone, mostly because I ran out of those little styluses for the clay tablets. It was slow.
Yeah.
And so I can't make a comparison. I use data a lot now because it screams. I'm getting, if you look at the data rates in my blog, it was download rates on the order of 3 megabits per second on 3G, which I think is just stunning. Anything over 300 baud makes me, impressed.
But you can't get it to die out or to stop like you can in Cameron's example.
I haven't done the real analysis where. Comparing it to the primordial iPhone, put it that way. But from a voice point of view, as a cell phone, I can't detect any significant difference. And it's not because I'm sitting under a cell tower. The holes where I lose calls, I still lose calls in the holes.
Right.
So it's at least as good, and probably a little better, but I can't really say for sure.
Now, do you use a case on your iPhone 4 now?
Yes, I do. I bought the iPhone bumpers shortly before we did our testing, and it hasn't come off since.
Gotcha.
Actually, that's a little bit of a lie, okay? It has come off, and let me tell you why. Because earphones that would fit in the top of the iPhone 4 when you put the bumpers on don't fit anymore.
Oh, we got a recessed problem again.
Again, which means I had to go back to the primordial iPhone adapter and continue using it on my iPhone 4. That really ticks me off.
Ouch. You think they would figure that out by now.
Same thing on the dock connectors.
Yeah, that's right. I have an old DC adapter that I used on my primordial iPhone. I went to plug it into the iPhone 4 with the bumpers on it. Won't plug in. I had to scramble on this last road trip and buy a new power cord and, get everything working in the car again. But so those things made me take the bumpers off so I can plug my stuff in, which kind of, torqued me a little bit. But as far as everyday use of the phone, the bumpers are on it and and on it they will stay until I get my OtterBox, which I'm patiently waiting for.
So, and those should be shipping in just a few days.
Oh, cool! I bet Jeff, you have some real information on that too.
Yeah, the OtterBox Defender should be hitting people's hands within the week. Cool. Or by next week, I mean.
So, Spencer, do you recommend that everybody gets a case on their iPhone 4, or is it a matter of if you have issues with it and you want a case, then go get a case? Or is it, do you have to operate? Is it one of those you might as well just have one on your phone because it's just going to work so much better?
Well, personally, from the day I walked out of the Apple store with the primordial iPhone, it was in a spec case. It was in the rubberized spec case, which I really loved. And I kind of would have done the same thing with the iPhone 4, except I got it via, I had it shipped to me instead of going to the store. So then later I went to the store and I finally got the bumpers. My personal opinion is you should get a case for it. I think the iPhone 4 has a sufficient sensitivity to the hand that you need the bumpers. Once you have the bumpers, I think it's a non-issue, but I still think you need something.
Do you think we should still hold this against Apple, the design of the iPhone 4, or do we think it's been way overblown?
No, don't hold it against anything. You'll lose your signal.
It's true. Well, you know what? I don't hear anybody griping about the Apple Lisa. Anybody remember that? That was...
yeah.
I read about it.
Oh, am I dating myself now? Bummer. That was a horrible kludge of a computer. It was junk, and it was junk from the day it was sold. And, you know, we're not talking about it anymore. The iPhone 4 isn't junk. It just had this little quirk. We're making a whole bunch of hubbub about it. In a few months, we're not going to be talking about it anymore.
And we're going to be enjoying the rest of the benefits of the iPhone 4. So I guess you would say that the benefits of the iPhone 4 definitely outweigh this one issue. So if you're thinking about getting one, you might as well just get one.
Oh, heck yes.
Okay.
Especially, and maybe I'm a little bit tainted because I came from the primordial iPhone. So this thing is like light speed compared to that. But no, I'm loving every bit of it. I like the multitasking, and I like the processor speed. The screen is glorious. The camera is magnificent. No, I think it's a great phone. And believe me, if I thought the antenna was a showstopper, I'd say so.
Okay. Great. Now, we have a few more things I want to cover. Spencer, I know I told you it would be about an hour, so you're welcome to drop off if you need to.
No, I'm in. I'm good.
Okay, Cameron, you good to stick around too?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Then in that case, we will take a sponsor break and get back to stuff in a moment. And so this week's sponsor of We Have Communicators is Camalert at camalert.com, K-A-M-A-L-E-R-T.com. It's been recently updated and features greatly improved sensitivity of the motion detection and usability of the app. And for those who don't know what Camalert does, it's a personal security and surveillance device application, surveillance application. It says device on my notes here. So the personal security portion of it allows you to, if you have either a medical emergency or just a general emergency, you can set up two separate categories. So if you have medical issues, such as you need insulin sometimes or something like that, some other kind of issue where you know about it and it might be a problem, and you might not be able to call somebody, you can set it up to send out an email, you can send out text message, and to your emergency contacts, and it will also send them your location. And for the personal emergency option, you can also have it sound off an alarm. So it's kind of like those old keychains that will make a loud noise that deters people. So it'll do something like that, and so it's great for something. For a case where you can't necessarily speak or get a hold of somebody quickly, you know, through voice calling. The other part of Cam Alert allows you to set up a little surveillance device. You can, especially with the iPhone 4, now that you can just set it on its side, which is really cool. So you can use the surveillance feature. It just sits there, hangs out, and monitors the camera. And whenever there is motion, it will take photos at specified intervals and email and or text message. Does it, Adam, do you know if the text message portion works with the surveillance part, or is it just email?
I don't remember. I think it works both.
Okay, so it might do an MMS or... Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I think it does do an MMS.
Okay, cool. The only thing is you have to buy SMS credits. It comes with several, I think 3 or 5 credits to start off with. That's because the iPhone 4 or iOS doesn't allow third-party apps to do SMS stuff. So
it's it's part of the rules around
developers.
SMS thing too. How they have to bridge the connection to the SMS network from the app.
Right, exactly. So you can check that out. It's in the App Store. It is, I should have that in my notes. Do you remember how much it is, Kat, Adam?
$4.99
in the App Store. Check it out. Cam Alert, KAMALERT, or camalert.com. And we thank them for their sponsorship and support of the We Have Communicators podcast. And with that, there have been some updates. We referred to them earlier on. iOS 4.01, of course, addresses the antenna display issue, so it will show larger bars, which I personally think look really goofy. But it does show larger bars, so you can see all of them much easier if you have problems with your eyesight like I do. And so they're bigger, and they show less bars. So kudos to that. Also, iOS 4.1 beta has been released to developers. So that's a private thing. If you're a developer, you have access to that. And it includes various little tweaks, such as they added the Game Center back in there. The Game Center app actually has a new interface, which is much cooler than the first version. Hasn't been announced yet when that's going to come out, but that is for, you know, sharing scores and you know, leaderboard kind of stuff for games whenever they do roll that out. You can also add favorites, so for the favorites screen you can just tap it and have it call somebody, but now with 4.1 you can actually have it specify to do a straight to FaceTime call as well, and a bunch of other little cleanup things, such as the buttons moving correctly when you rotate it, and you can also turn off the ability to check spelling in the settings. And has anyone had access to 4.1, Cameron? Maybe.
I haven't downloaded it yet. I guess I should. But I can't imagine that it's much more different than 4.0 that I'd have to release some bug fixes or whatnot.
Yeah.
And if I did, I probably couldn't talk about it.
That's true. The NDA. But it doesn't seem like there's a whole lot of other stuff in there that's changed. Although, I believe Boy Genius Report poked through it and found that we were talking about how an iOS device without a cell connection could do a FaceTime call, because, you know, that's you start a phone call, and then you hit the FaceTime button, and that's how you connect. And it seems that, according to Boy Genius, the option to link FaceTime to an email address is in there, and it kind of implies that you'd be using your Apple ID for doing something like that. And who was it that said they tried turning on airplane mode and just doing Wi-Fi only and doing a FaceTime?
That was me, and it worked beautifully.
Now, do you suspect that it's an email address thing? Or I guess you don't have your email addresses in there yet in a way that FaceTime would access it and understand that, right?
Well, I think, and I'm totally pulling stuff out of my ass right now, just based on what I experimented with. But it looks to me like Apple is probably linking your phone number with your like your MobileMe account or with your Apple ID, and then using that to initiate the call over Wi-Fi. Because if you can start a brand new call with someone, never having a 3G connection active, then it can't be just, oh, you both have an iPhone phone number, so here you go.
Yeah, interesting. Now, the only thing is, I'm thinking, how did you start the FaceTime call? Is it you just tap on their phone number, right? If you're on Wi-Fi only.
Yeah.
And it just... Go ahead, Adam.
Michael, there's actually once you've enabled it or in your contacts, there's actually a FaceTime. There's like a whole new FaceTime button.
Okay, so you can just say...
You go into contacts and you click FaceTime. And if they're already, I think like Jeff saying, if they're already registered with the FaceTime central server, it knows how to go out and find their device.
Interesting. Yeah, so I guess that'd be the way they would do FaceTime for the iPod Touch and ostensibly for the iPad when that happens.
That would make sense to me.
Yep.
And of course, I have already made it very clear I'm pulling stuff out of my ass.
That's perfectly fine.
You know, I imagine it works just like if anybody, you know, the way something like, you know, are you familiar with Slingbox?
Yeah.
That, you know, lets you stream your TV from your home internet connection, or if you use a service like Dyn DNS or whatever, any service where there's just a centralized server that you need to register with, and then there's an ID number for the hardware so that it knows how to get its way back. So they could use a phone number, they could use an email. The key is tying the device IDs, which they can see on the networks, to their central server.
Right,
and
right.
And just making that, you know, acting like a switch operator. So you can even go back to old telephone days, right? They're just acting as that switch operator. Let's connect this connection to that connection. And as long as they know the IDs on the two end that want to connect, away you go.
Yep. Okay, what else do we have here? Apple reportedly placed a bid to buy Palm before they were outbid by HP, which is interesting. Allegedly, they were planning to do it mostly for the intellectual property, but also they allegedly were planning to keep Palm around.
You know, as soon as I heard that part of the rumor, I called fake on the whole thing.
There's got to be so much bad blood between those two companies at this point, with John Rubinstein becoming the CEO after he helped invent the iPod.
Well, there's that, but also, why in the world would Apple want to maintain a competing product line?
Supposedly, because they
invest the resources into that.
Well, yeah, it's true. It does compete with the iPhone, but supposedly because they want to have some device in the physical keyboard space. But that's
fake
so weak.
Fake.
Now, a more believable argument would have been that it's for the webOS stuff,
which is crap.
Apple has their whole new initiative with the WebKit and all that web stuff. So maybe there is some interesting developments that Palm made when developing the webOS that could be rolled into some of the things that Apple's doing with the Safari web-based apps and their toolkits and things like that over there, or even just rolling into their own web interfaces for things like Mobile Me and expanding of maybe iTunes streaming and iTunes itself on the web. So, you know, I think between intellectual property and those types of things, it probably could have had some value to Apple. And I was frankly surprised because I think HP picked it up for like $1.8 billion, which seemed pretty reasonable.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm thinking if Apple really did put a bid in for Palm, it was just for the intellectual property, and they get control of that IP, and then they have another tool to stop other people from making products that are too similar to the iPhone, iPod Touch, and iPad.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I think it's really funny thinking of like Steve Jobs wanting to support a company with physical keyboards, you know, given like the slides on the first iPhone launch.
No, yeah, he hates buttons.
No, yeah. And I think that that's really funny.
Yeah, yeah. The did you guys hear that the authorities finally have withdrawn their search warrant in the Gizmodo iPhone 4 case, and supposedly Gizmodo is actually cooperating with the district attorney and giving them information that is relevant to the case instead of having to, you know, have all of his stuff under their authority. So he gets his stuff back.
Gizdodo?
And what's that?
Gizdodo?
Yeah. Gizdomo.
So, all right. So to put this in perspective, If, let's say, Michael, that you were caught pretty much dead to rights having committed felony theft. Just say, you know, like maybe you bought a stolen iPhone prototype off someone and totally nailed by the police. But you still had some information that might be useful to them. And they said, you know, we'll let you have your junk back that we took from you. And we'll even get rid of this warrant if you help us out and do this other stuff. And maybe we'll even go kind of easier on you with our criminal case. Wouldn't you at least consider that? Now, of course, this is all hypothetical.
Yeah. Well, but, yeah, and in a case where I want my iPad back, I want my friggin' iPad back, man. Of course.
Right. Yeah, you'd cooperate, and then hopefully you wouldn't have to spend as much time in jail as Jason Chen was potentially looking at.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. I mean, jail is not a cool place to hang out. And I'm sure that gave Gizmodo a lot of incentive to suddenly start cooperating with law enforcement.
Yeah, you know where else you don't get an iPad? Jail.
Oh, yeah.
yeah, that's true.
True story.
So this whole thing about it's a big win for
journalistic shield laws and stuff like that.
Yeah. I mean, come on. If this is really about journalistic shield laws need to be protected, because in my opinion, this case does not fit that at all. But if it turns out it does, I am so moving to California, I'm going to open up my own assassination company. Anyone you need offed, you let me know.
And then you'll just blog about it and then it's cool, right?
Right. And I'll be rich.
Yes. All right. So what else do we have here to talk about? Apple's added audio and video capabilities to iBooks, which, I don't know, is that a big deal? They also added the ability, this is what I'm excited about, to double tap on a photo within a book and get a full screen. That's something that I thought should have been in there from the beginning.
Yeah. Yeah. The audio and video thing is just to catch up with Kindle. It's, right. That's just a keeping up with the Joneses kind of feature.
Right, that's what I thought too.
I imagine it wasn't even hard because it's probably based on HTML.
Yeah, they probably just added a few lines of code and turned it on.
Probably took them like a day.
Yeah. Now the actually, Spencer, I have a couple questions that came in via Twitter regarding the antenna stuff. I actually asked about the antenna, if, you know, if it happens at the top as well. I'm guessing it probably won't if you're kind of gripping the top of the antenna, because you said that the feed point is at the lower left.
Well, in Wi-Fi, it might happen. In other words, if you're doing a Skype call on Wi-Fi, for example, and you covered up the top of the phone, it might have a similar effect. I have not tested this, but that's where the antenna is, so it may also have some issues. That might be something we could try.
Yeah. Another question was, why does Apple use anechoic chambers? Aren't those for audio?
Oh, that's a great question. Anechoic chamber is a generic term that means any kind of a room that when something hits the walls, that some means for not letting it bounce back is there. So there are audio anechoic chambers, which have deep foam eggshells or pyramids on the walls. And there are RF anechoic chambers. Now, keep in mind that audio is sound pressure through air, and RF is electromagnetic waves. They're very, very different. They have nothing in common. However, in RF, what you would need is something to absorb RF signals on the walls so that they don't come back, they get absorbed. It's just the same as being out in an open field. And frequently, these look like audio anechoic chambers. They look like they're made out of a blue foam with these deep pyramids on the walls. And what happens is when the electromagnetic wave hits the foam is loaded with carbon, which is a lossy conductor, and the energy gets absorbed and turned into heat. And a very tiny, tiny fraction ends up reflecting back. So anechoic chambers are useful for doing tests that where you don't want echoes, you don't want reflections, and you don't want to be outside because it's not as controllable and it's not as forgiving as far as the weather is concerned. So you build a big anechoic chamber and you spend millions and millions of dollars.
Right. Now with these chambers, is Apple able to lock out the external signal? So they have a tower from AT&T on their campus, but are they producing their own signal within those chambers?
Yes. An anechoic chamber, an RF anechoic chamber, is also going to be a Faraday cage. It's going to block signals from outside getting in. So when Apple is doing their testing in their anechoic chambers, they're probably using what we call a cell site simulator, which is an extremely expensive box that behaves like a cell site. And that allows them to make very tight closed loop measurements of how the phone's behaving because they are controlling the cell site.
Right, so they can reproduce a good cell area and they can also reproduce a poor coverage area.
Precisely, exactly. That's right. They can attenuate the signal, make it very, very weak inside of that chamber and observe how the phone behaves. They could also introduce errors into the cell site behavior and see how the phone handles it. So that is really useful and really expensive. But apparently they do have that that capability.
At Paul Franz asked if the problem with the iPhone 4 could have been solved or mitigated by using a different frequency.
No. The frequencies of the cell system are fixed and standardized. So if you want to be talking to the cell tower, you have to be tuned into that frequency. You don't get to choose. So he may be asking a slightly different question than I am understanding, but
possibly.
The answer is no.
Now, there with GSM, there at least in the United States, there are two or three. I think AT&T is only using two. Do you recall? It's like 819 or something.
Yeah, I don't have the frequencies in front of me, and I actually have a really great cheat sheet which is buried in a box somewhere because we just moved our offices. The generally it's called quad band because there's two bands around 900 megahertz. One is generally US and the other is generally European. And there's two bands up around 1900 megahertz. One is 1800 megahertz ish, and the other is 1900 megahertz ish. So they're really two big bands, but we call it quad band. So the antenna needs to work at both of those very broad bands, and it's actually quite challenging to design an antenna structure to do that.
Yeah, I'm looking at the iPhone tech specs right now. It looks like 850, 900, 1900, and 2100. So I'm thinking I think in the U.S. we're using 850 and 1900. And is it true
Yes.
that in areas where you have big tall buildings and thick walls and stuff like that, it's better to have a lower frequency so it can get through those walls?
Yes and no. I could be in politics. the problem with low frequencies do tend to penetrate better. For example, if you're in a wooden building with drywall, like my house is, then the lower the frequency, the more the penetration. That's true. But if you're in a building with steel walls and the frequency is just not going to matter. In fact, in some situations, the higher frequencies will reflect more and they'll get you out of a hole by reflection better than the lower frequencies. So there's no simple answer that says one is better than the other. But it's called the urban canyon problem. The urban canyon is a very challenging place, and the absolute best place to test a cell phone is Manhattan. If you can make it there, you can make it anywhere.
Yeah, yeah. I go to Chicago frequently, and it's just, you know, sometimes with GPS, I'm driving around, and that little dot will just bounce all around the place, and it doesn't work properly. And sometimes I just drop calls randomly, and it's probably because of those big tall buildings, right?
Yeah, there's a phenomenon called multipath, which is where you're getting signals from different directions because of reflections. So you might get a direct signal from the cell tower, and then you might get a reflected signal off of building A and another reflected signal off of building B, and the paths of all these signals are different lengths, and they arrive at the phone in different phases, and you could end up standing looking at the cell tower and having absolutely no signal. It's pretty funky. And that's called multipath, and it's pretty difficult to deal with. There are ways to deal with it, but not in a small cell phone.
Gotcha. Now, do you think that there's a way, and this is, you know, I mean, there's really no way you could truly figure this out, but do you think Apple is planning to slipstream some kind of change in? I know the white iPhone 4 hasn't come out yet. Do you think there might be a some enough leeway in their design to tweak it in an effective way to affect the antenna?
I don't think anybody's going to like my answer to this. It's no.
Okay.
They've designed, you know, you can't drop a grain of sand into that phone. There's no room. There's nothing to do. I would be delightfully surprised if Apple came out with anything they could do to the hardware to ameliorate this problem. I don't see it happening. I think this is what it is for this design. And I am sure that for, you know, one or two generations down the road, we'll see something else in the antenna department. But right now, this is it.
Okay. Now, I didn't tell you that we were going to do this. We have iPhone picks toward the end of the show. Cameron, I didn't let you know either. If you want to jump in, you guys are both welcome. You want to recommend an iPad or iPhone product or app or something, or if you need to drop out and you know, go be with your families or do something else, that's totally fine. But I also want to touch on the fact that Jobs also mentioned the white iPhone will be out at the end of the month, instead of the second half of the month, which I think we all kind of suspected would happen. But it's rumored that the issue with that is just painting the glass, that they're just having issues in getting it perfectly Jonathan Ive white. So I'm still waiting.
You know what? One comment on that. I want to know how many of these machines they have, because according to the report, they say something like it takes, how long to make three, like a day to make three of them? Or something like that. Is
what?
That right?
To make the white
crap
iPhone?
No, I don't buy that.
I don't buy that either.
that was the thing. What? Now I got to find the number for you. Or it was something ridiculous. Or 3 an hour.
That sounds
something
more likely.
Crazy.
But
okay, so
still
let's say 3 an hour. That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Because how many of these machines? How many white iPhones do you think they have to make? They have to make a million a day. Do the math.
Let's,
if you can only do
let's get
three
pragmatic.
An hour.
If you were Apple, okay, would you make a public announcement about what your throughput capability is in your manufacturing line? I sure wouldn't.
Yeah.
No. Yeah, this isn't from Apple. This is the speculators. But I'm just pointing out how ridiculous this number is. If you want to believe the rumors, the minute I read that number, I was like, well, if it's 3 an hour, whatever the number is, but let's just assume it's 3 an hour, they'd have to have, you know, tens of thousands of these machines running 24/7 to produce enough displays to even meet a minimum quantity.
I think it's fair to say we just don't know.
Yeah.
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 All right. So I think unless you guys have any other questions for Spencer or some relevant topics to bring up, we can move on to our iDevice picks. And I can start with Jeff.
Okay. So my pick hopefully will still be around by the time the podcast actually hits the internet. And it's an application called Handy Light. And you know where I'm going with this. So yeah. It's an application that came out Tuesday late in the afternoon. It's a flashlight application, and you can pick the different colors for the for the light on your iPhone. The kicker is, though, it has an Easter egg built in that gives you tethering.
What?
Oh.
Buying. Yeah. Is it Nick Lee?
Yeah, it's Nick Lee's app.
But.
So, yeah, 99 cents. And it gives you tethering access.
What's it called?
Handy Light. All one word.
No, two words. And, Handy Space Light.
Oh, it's two words?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And the version you have is 101?
It's whatever came out this afternoon.
Okay. Well, that's the one that's up there right now. So, yeah, continue. I guess that's it. How does the tethering work?
Do I need to go any farther than that?
Yeah. Is it H-A-N-D-Y?
H-A-N-D-Y-L-I-G-H-T. And the icon is like a white square. Or it's like a flashlight with rainbow lines coming out of it.
Yeah, I see that. So is it Wi-Fi tethering or is it Bluetooth or how does it work?
It's Wi-Fi tethering. And so it has several steps you have to go through. So you have to save a network setup that you create where you're building an ad hoc network off of your Mac. And I'm assuming it would work the same way on a Windows PC. And then once you've done that, you join the network with your iPhone. And then you go into the Handy Light app. And then you have to tap the colors for the flashlight in a specific order.
Do you know what the order is?
Yeah. Yeah. The order is blue, yellow, red.
I think.
And then you tap, it's like the right corner of your screen. And then you see a different color for the display. Like it changes to like purple or something. And then that lets you know, okay, you're set.
Now, will it work while it's in the background?
I don't know. I haven't had a chance to test yet.
I am in the App Store right now, and it's gone.
I just purchased it. Yeah, I just grabbed it.
I just searched on it, and H-A-N-D-Y. I'm getting nothing.
Handy Space Light. You know, it didn't auto-complete for me when I searched for it. I just had to search for Handy Light, and then I found it under the iPhone apps category. For me, it's number 3 when I see it. I got it. Perfect.
Bought. Done.
Wow. I jailbreak and do all that stuff, and it's probably a little easier than what Handy Light provides, but man, I'm just giving the guy 99 cents as a hats off to, like, that's a ballsy move.
Yeah. he got it in there, and you don't have to jailbreak to use this.
Yeah. Wow, cool.
Now I have a reason to stay with my unlimited plan. I'm glad I didn't switch.
All right, so it's 99 cents, Handy Light. It's the one with the rainbows coming out of it by Nick Lee.
So you probably should have picked me last because that's going to be a hard one to top.
Yeah, yeah. I think so.
Well done.
All right,
good night,
Adam.
Everybody.
Yeah, Adam, it's your turn, Adam.
My turn?
Yep.
Hey, have we done it's not a direct iPhone pick, but I ended up using this again this week and then just realized how awesome it was. Have we done the Turbo .264 HD from Elgato?
No, we haven't.
Okay. Well, let's do that because also they announced a software version, and this is really almost the software pick more than the hardware pick. But for those who don't know, the Turbo .264 HD is a little... looks like a USB key or a USB thumb drive, a large one. And it is a hardware H.264 encoder, sort of daughter card on a USB stick for encoding video. But what puts it over the top is that they have this software that makes it dead simple to take any video you have. It supports just about anything I've been able to throw at it, including MKV and FLAC, and you know, I don't know, you name the video format, you throw it at this thing, you just launch the software, you drag it in there, and then they have a bunch of presets for your different iThings. So you say, oh, I have a first generation iPod, I want to send the video to that, or I want to encode the video for my Apple TV or my iPad, they just updated with iPad presets, or I want a universal one that's going to work with, you know, be compatible with most devices, I'm willing to sacrifice a little quality. You just set that and you hit go, and it encodes it and dumps it into iTunes for you. And, you know, I'm not going to say that it's the best quality. Some people have compared it to something like Handbrake, but it is dead simple, the easiest to use software, and it does it quick, especially if you have the hardware encoder. What's nice about the little hardware dongle is that it offloads the processing from your Mac. So even if you have, you know, a really beefy Mac that can crunch the video, you might not gain any speed gain, but what you can gain is multitasking. So you can have it encoding in the background and using this little hardware device, and that frees up your processor so you can actually work and not have your system bogged down as you're encoding, you know, a large video. So if you're converting a DVD or something like that into an iTunes iPad-friendly format, it's going to do it really well and efficiently. That's if you have the little hardware thing, but you can also now just get the software. So the hardware plus software is $99.95, and the software only is $49.95. And it's a great product, and I keep coming back to using it over and over again because I was wanting to re-encode something for my Apple TV that I had in a lower quality format, and it was just like, boom, done. And another handy feature is you can have it stitch videos together automatically. You can have it edit out. It has a little basic editing features if you want to edit out commercials. So if you've recorded something on, you know, like if you have the Elgato iTV or something you pulled off your TiVo, your DVR, you can clip those things out before you encode it into an iTunes iPod friendly format, things like that.
Cool. Is there a change in the software? Because you said there was a recent update, or is...
They just updated the software to add some new presets for iPad. And,
oh, cool.
I have
one of these too. I had the original Turbo 264, and now I have the HD version. It's such a cool thing because you know it has the special hardware in there to encode it, and then you can just use your Mac as you do normally, right, when you won't have a problem.
Yeah, what I really like about it is I don't have to think about, oh, you know, the frame rate and the bit rate and the. I just go, oh, I want this on my iPad or I want this on my Apple TV. Now you can still go in there and tweak those things. There's an advanced settings and you can set up your own custom presets. But if most of us don't want to deal with that, we just want video spit out that looks good on my iPad. That's all you have to think about.
Yep, cool. It's the Turbo 264 HD, and Spencer, do you have an iDevice pick? It can be a case, it can be software, it can be whatever you want.
Well, I have to give props to speedtest.net. Their app allowed us to do all the cool testing we did. And I guess the second one would be LastPass. LastPass is a password vault manager that crosses between your iPhone and your PC and any possible browser you want to run, and it totally solves the problem of remembering all these very secure and voluminous passwords. It's been around a little while, keeps getting better, and I don't know where I'd be without it at this point.
Cool. So it runs has an iPad version, iPhone version. And it is the PC Mac version, is that pay or is that free as well?
I believe it's free. I think the only charge is for the mobile apps, which are available on multiple platforms, and I think it's very inexpensive. I think it's 99 cents. I don't have the app store up in front of me.
Yeah.
But the PC based ones are free. And for more information you should listen to Steve Gibson's podcast over at grc.com. He reviews it and goes over the security features, and it's tight as a drum, very secure, totally trustable, and a great product.
Cool. Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. It's both the iPhone and the iPad versions are free in the App Store. So
cool.
So check it out. Cameron, do you want to do an iDevice pick?
Yeah, I have something.
Okay, go ahead.
It's an application called...
Birdhouse.
Thermometer.
Thermometer?
It's an application called Thermometer, and it's by Tupia. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. But you open it up, ask for your location, it gets your location, and then it displays the temperature for your location.
Cool. And
that's all it does.
It's dead simple.
It is really dead simple, and it And it's nice because it gets your location. And once, you know, you say, okay, you can use my location, all you have to do is launch the application, and wherever you are, it'll get you location. So, you know, some weather applications, you set locations, and then they update when you open the application. But say if I'm, like, I'm in a town for, like, a day, and I'm never ever going to come back to this town, I don't want to add it to my weather application. I just want to see what the temperature is right now.
Yeah.
Where I am. So I just, it works. And it's simple, and it's great.
That's awesome. So you just open it up, it finds the location of wherever you are currently, and just displays the temperature.
Yeah.
Cool.
And it looks kind of nice. You know, like animates the bar of, it looks like a thermometer, and it animates like a little red bar going up and down. So.
Awesome. It's called Thermometer. It's 99 cents, and it's by Toopia, T-O-O-P-I-A. And so my iPhone pick is I actually have an iPad game that I just grabbed. A lot of people have probably already heard of Geometry Wars. It's a very popular game for, I think, like every platform. The big draw with it, of course, is that it has some really fun graphics. It's like a 2D game with some 3D flourishes, and it looks kind of like light bike-ish if you haven't seen it already. But you get to your little spaceship, and you're running around a grid, and you have to shoot at these geometric shapes, and you run around and you avoid them, and you can, you know, set off bombs and do different things. And it's a really fun experience. And if you know what it is, the graphics are wonderful. On the iPad and the 3GS, I saw that some people were complaining the graphics weren't great, and that's the big draw with this game. So if you have an iPhone 3G or an earlier iPod Touch, for example, that doesn't have the graphics capabilities, so I think the iPod Touch 2G and first generation and will not give you great graphics. But otherwise, it's really cool. It's very, very simple. You just move around and you shoot, you tap and hold, and the bullets just keep coming. So it's, you know, like an old style arcade game, and you just point in the direction you want to fire and you avoid the enemies. And it's got some really awesome music, actually. I should turn it up so you guys can hear it. Kind of like dance trancey music. Yeah, so I could keep playing forever and ever. But Geometry Wars Touch, it's a universal app, so if you have a 3GS or an iPhone 4 and an iPad, works on both of them. So check it out, $5. Geometry Wars Touch, that is my pick. And with that, you can check out the show notes, of course, at whcpodcast.com, or wehavecommunicators.com. Feedback can be sent to feedback@wehavecommunicators.com, and that you can send in your feedback, your questions, comments, all that stuff, and we appreciate that. If you have audio comments, we didn't have time for that because it's just such a long, content-packed show, and it's just so great. But you can call in, phone calls, feedback, questions, all that stuff. The phone number is 202-642-6667, so you can do phone call that way, or you can just send in an audio comment using the feedback address, which again is feedback@wehavecommunicators.com. You can find Adam Christensen at the MacCast, MacCast.com, and twitter.com/MacCast, and the premium show is at member.MacCast.com. Thanks, Adam.
Hey, thanks, Michael.
And you can find Jeff Gamet at the Mac Observer, MacObserver.com, twitter.com/JGamet. CafePress.com/JGamet is his store where you can find his wonderful drawings. And he actually sent me one during the show. He likes to doodle while we record. So there's one of, a guy being sad about his iPhone 4 problems?
It's a little robot that's all sad because one of his ear antennas broke off.
Oh, okay. It's very cool.
It's like an allegory for the show today.
Yeah, I love it. That's actually going to be up in the show notes. Whenever Jeff does a drawing during the show, we throw that in the show notes, so you can get that at wehavecommunicators.com. So thank you for being here, Jeff.
Well, thanks. As always, it's a blast.
And Cameron Hunt, of course, is the senior lead, wonderful head developer at Sandwich Dynamics, the giant company behind Birdhouse.
Right.
Birdhouse, was it birdhouseapp.com?
Yes. Yes, and, that's it.
It's the wonderful notepad for Twitter, and I love it. I use it all the time. And twitter.com/camh. And
I would recommend my Twitter stream, though.
You have a good Twitter stream. I follow you.
Yeah, bunch of jokes. Okay.
Bunch of jokes. If you like jokes, camh. And doing anything else that you want to pimp, or is that about it?
No, it's been great on this show.
Great. Well, thanks for coming on. We're really happy to have you. We've been referring back to that video that you put on Vimeo many, many times on previous shows. So we appreciate you coming on.
No problem.
And Spencer Webb is at antennasys.com and twitter.com/antennasys. And, of course, what's the blog URL for the Antennasys blog?
It's antennasys.com, www.antennasys.com/antennasys-blog. But there's a link right on the front page.
Yep, there's a link right on the front page. And the one you want to check out, I'm going to throw a link in the show notes to this, but the specific one you want to check out is iPhone 4 meets the grip of death Anator.
That's the one.
And it has the big analysis of the antenna stuff. So thank you so much for being on here. Spencer,
my pleasure.
It was great, and all the listeners, I'm sure, are very appreciative that you answered all these questions for us. So,
I'm happy to be here. Next time you have some antenna emergency, don't hesitate to call.
Great. Thanks so much. And you can find my Twitter. I'm going to pimp my my new Twitter. It's twitter.com/lilreviews, L-I-L reviews. That's where I post little reviews of just stuff in general. So I review a coffee maker and, you know, some food from Whole Foods and movies that I see and apps that I use and cases that I use and all that stuff. Just little Twitter size reviews. So check it out. Little reviews or twitter.com/littlereviews. And with that, that's it. We'll see you next time on We Have Communicators.
An iPod. An iPod. Internet. How are we going to communicate this? The stylus. We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do? So what are we going to do? Oh, a stylus, right?